It's 2 o'clock. Good afternoon. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Monday, August 5th. I'm Brian Shields in for Alan Shartok. Support for Medical Monday comes from Saratoga Hospital, working to bring doctors closer together to collaborate and closer to the hospital to improve patient care. I trust SaratogaHospital.org for information. Joining us this afternoon for Medical Monday, Dr. Joseph Popper of Nathan Tower Hospital. He's here to discuss the treatment of the neck, the back, and the spine. The number to call, 800-348-2551. That's 1-800-348-2551. This is Medical Monday Vox Pop. Dr. Popper and your calls all coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Joining us on this Medical Monday today to discuss the treatment of the neck, back, and spine is Dr. Joseph Popper of Nathan Litauer Hospital. Dr. Popper is an orthopedic surgeon who specializes in cervical spine surgery and minimally invasive lumbar procedures. He has completed a combined neurosurgical and orthopedic spine surgery fellowship with the Mayo Clinic. He is a graduate of the University of Washington School of Medicine. Thank you for joining us today on WAMC's Vox Pop. I'm Brian Shields in for Alan Shartok. The number to call today, 800-348-2551. It's 800-348-2551. Tweet your questions and comments at WAMC Vox Pop. Email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number today, 800-348-2551. The neck, the back, and the spine today on Medical Monday. Dr. Popper, thank you for coming in today.
Thank you for having me.
You know, we know about protecting the back, lift with your legs, that kind of thing. How do you protect the spine? Is there spine care guidelines we should be watching?
I don't have specific guidelines, but in general, I recommend for most patients that a routine cardiovascular exercise, so three times a week of exercise that elevates your heart rate is good, and then core strengthening, and generally trying to keep your weight in a healthy range.
Does the aerobics make the spine tougher? Is that it?
So, yeah, I think it actually does. The general benefits of cardiovascular exercise seem to go beyond just exercising the heart muscle itself. It seems to help with the overall health of your spine in general.
800-348-2551 is the number to call. It's 800-348-2551. Of all the patients you see, doctor, how many are from injuries? How many are just have the equipment wore out? We got old, the bones kind of age, the joints age, et cetera, and things just kind of fall apart.
It seems to be a pretty big mix. I think there is a genetic component to this where people do get degenerative conditions earlier than others. But in general, the natural history of the spine as we age is everybody does get disc degeneration and features of wearing out. Some people get it much earlier than others. And then you kind of alluded to the fact that injuries, I think, also can set people up to get it at an earlier age than they otherwise were. So some people may have had a fall or a car accident earlier on and then had an associated injury to either the bone or the soft tissues and probably sets them down a path of degeneration earlier than they otherwise may have.
So that injury in high school football can come back and bite you 50 years later.
Potentially.
Yeah. 800-348-2551. Jim and Matamoros, go ahead.
Is external spinal manipulation helpful or harmful for the treatment of a dislocated disc?
So do you mean a disc herniation, Jim?
Yeah.
Okay, because there's a couple things. People do get herniated discs. That's the disc itself is the shock absorber between the vertebral bodies or the bones in our spines. And it has a harder outer coating and kind of a more of a gelatinous material inside. Sometimes you can get a weakening of the outer covering and some of that inner material can either herniate out where it leaks into the spine and can cause direct pressure on the neural elements. So in general, the studies that we have mostly on spinal manipulation is for acute onset of back pain. So for an acute flare of back pain, not necessarily associated with a herniated disc. And the studies are actually pretty good to say that it is equivalent or superior to other conservative treatment methods, being physical therapy or anti-inflammatory medications. If there's a large herniated disc, I worry, because I don't know each person what their chiropractor would be doing for them. But I think in the setting, if you're just talking about low back pain, then it's safe to do. I worry a little more if there's conclusive findings of a disc herniation on an MRI about doing aggressive manipulation.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for calling. It's 800-348-2551. Medical Monday today with Dr. Joseph Popper of Nathan LaTower Hospital, an orthopedic surgeon who specializes in cervical spine surgery and minimally invasive lumbar procedures. What's the lumbar?
So the spine is broken up into three areas: cervical, thoracic, and lumbar. So the cervical spine would be the top seven levels, thoracic would be the middle 12, and the lumbar is lumbar 1 through 5. And the reason you hear lumbar so much is the low back. It's kind of the base of your whole thorax, and that tends to be the place where you see degeneration or wearing out.
That tends to take most of the work.
I would say the lumbar spine and cervical spine. The thoracic spine is connected to your rib cage, which acts as an internal splint. And so you don't see a lot of degeneration in the thoracic spine. It's not an area of the spine that moves very much. It's rather stiff. So because of that, the lumbar spine and cervical spine have a lot of movement. They tend to wear out most.
You can tweet your questions and comments. WAMC Vox Pop. Email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But the number, 800-348-2551. Stuart in Newburgh, go ahead.
Doctor, thank you. My question relates to post-fusion surgery recovery and how you control inflammation, nerve pain down the legs, and dangers of multiple steroid injections and other treatments, like CBD or marijuana or anything else that I don't know about.
Yeah. How far out from fusion?
4 weeks.
Okay, so pretty.
It was a complicated procedure, so it was considered to be, extra invasive.
Okay. So nerve pain after fusion, there's a couple different paths that I see patients take. Is they have a surgery to address their sciatic pain. A certain amount of patients, at least half of them, will feel that resolution of that pain immediately. Other patients will have either a flare exacerbation or a persistence of some of that sciatica that gradually dissipates over time. It could be for several reasons. It could be from just manipulation of the nerve during surgery. Sometimes the things that when we're doing a fusion, we're trying to, one, get the pressure off the neural elements to relieve the leg pain, but we're also trying to glue the two bones together, so to speak. And there's a variety of different materials we use to do that. Sometimes some of those materials, they're very good at making bone, but they also create inflammation. So there's one called BMP that is commonly used. That is known to cause inflammation and radiculitis, which is basically nerve pain after surgery. Sometimes we try things like anti-inflammatories. We really don't like those in the early time after fusion, because it can actually slow down the fusion process. So I think that if it's really bad, a short course of steroids, maybe an injection. But early on, if you're this close to surgery, I think a lot of people would be hesitant to do those things, because we wouldn't want to slow down the fusion.
And so after an oral course and after two surgical injections, things are doing okay 3 days after the second surgical injection, but considering other treatments to make sure that I can maybe not have that third injection?
Yeah, I think other treatments would be fine. I sometimes also, if I'm worried, I might re-image a patient, so I might get a new MRI look and evaluate.
CT scan and it looked fine.
The CT scan?
Yeah, it looked fine. All the hardware, all the titanium looked like it was all in place, all the bones looked like they were aligned as the surgeon expected. So he was very happy with the look of the CT scan.
Okay. Yeah, the CT scan's very good at showing the bones and the hardware. Sometimes it doesn't show. It's not going to show the disc or the neural elements as well, too. So sometimes I still would consider an MRI. But definitely alternative treatments. I would try not to do as many steroid injections, because I'd be worried about the deleterious effect on the fusion.
And so what alternative treatments? I mean, no NSAIDs, I'm aware of that, but what alternative treatments do you think are advisable? I mean, I've tried acupuncture. I mean, get some help with that. A lot of help other times, but not necessarily so much this time.
Yeah. Yeah, acupuncture. There are things that therapists, I wouldn't want them to do any strengthening exercises, but sometimes they use a TENS unit or other ultrasound modalities to try to control inflammation and help with pain that doesn't involve manipulation. Ultimately, it's going to take some time, I think, is going to be the most important part of this equation.
800-348-2551. Gail in Wappingers Falls.
Hello.
Hi, go right ahead.
I just got an MRI back with the report back that I have severe spinal stenosis in, it says L2-3 through L4-5 in the lumbar area. And I've had intense, really intense pain since April. And you know, it just seems to be getting worse. I thought at first that, you know, I just threw my back out, but it seems to be more than that. And when I got the MRI back, I found out it was more than that. And I'm wondering, I was looking through alternatives to a fusion, which seems to be, you know, I've got heart problems, so I'm on Coumadin, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And so I just wondered if there's, you know, like a robotics type thing that would take care of a multi-level spinal stenosis of that area, or am I, you know?
Yeah, so a couple
kind
things.
Kind of like there's looking at fusion or other options.
Absolutely. So first to touch on, so stenosis just means narrowing. So lumbar stenosis is narrowing in the lumbar spine. So all that means is that the area where the nerves live, so this is below the spinal cord. The spinal cord ends about L1, and then you have a bunch of nerves that go down to your muscles and your legs. People get
In L1, it says I only have moderate central stenosis,
which makes sense.
Whatever that
so I
means.
Think,
but the rest of it is all, you know, what I just mentioned is supposedly severe. So I don't know what the difference is.
Well, it's how much narrowing there is, and there's radiographic parameters that the radiologists use. But if it's severe, it means there's just no space for the nerves. What that causes is oftentimes people have pain in their back, but also pain that goes into their buttocks and down the back of their legs. It makes it difficult to walk, difficult to stand, and oftentimes people describe feeling like if they were able to bend over and hold onto a shopping cart that they're able to walk further, or they'll have to sit down to get some relief. And the reason
I thought that was due to my overweight because
stenosis.
Like, I feel much better if I'm bent over, but I don't want to walk like an L.
The reason that is because when you bend forward or lean onto a shopping cart, the space for those nerves opens up a couple millimeters and gives relief. In general, the natural history of spinal stenosis, if you do nothing, meaning no surgery, about a third of people will get better, a third of people will stay the same, and a third of people will worsen. In general, I recommend patients try some conservative treatment initially, so that would be physical therapy. The next step is a little more invasive, which would be an epidural steroid injection, either done by someone like myself or a radiologist or a pain specialist also does that type of injection. And the last thing is surgery, and surgery definitely does not always have to include a fusion. There's only specific criteria I use where someone would have to have severe spinal stenosis and evidence of instability in order for me to recommend a fusion. So without seeing your x-ray, I'd say that about half the patients that come to me with severe spinal stenosis, if they fail conservative treatment, are going to be treated without a fusion surgery.
800-348-2551. Medical Monday Vox Pop. More calls in a moment.
Support comes from Albany Cardiothoracic Surgeons, providing patient-centered heart surgery for over 40 years in the Capital Region, practicing cardiac surgery at St. Peter's Hospital. ACTSURG.com. Interim Healthcare, helping people remain at home for 49 years, providing companions, aides, and nurses in the home 2 to 24 hours a day, serving the Capital Region, Columbia County, Glens Falls, and Saratoga, InTermHealthcare.com. Pelham Auto Service, Route 9 at the Amherst-Belchertown line. At the sign of the Flying Pig, worker-owned and operated service, repairing foreign cars since 1972. PelhamAuto.com. The Waldorf School of Saratoga Springs, giving children the education and tools for the challenges of an ever-changing world. WaldorfSaratoga.org. From MVP Healthcare, offering Medicare advice for people turning age 65 or retiring, more information at MVPMedicare.com. And from Quality Foreign Car Care, Ballston Spa, New York, specializing in European car sales and service for over 30 years. QFCC.com.
Medical Monday Vox Pop today, the back, the neck, and the spine with Dr. Joseph Popper of Nathan LaTower Hospital, an orthopedic surgeon, 800-348-2551. And let's go to Greenwich and Bob.
Yeah, hello.
Yeah, go right ahead, Bob.
Yeah, I've had back problems that's been diagnosed as a herniated disc at times. And every once in a while, I do something like about a month ago, I stepped off my tractor, and I just landed the wrong way, I think, because I just felt a little bit of a jolt, and I said, oh, well, I hope it doesn't get worse, and it did. And, you know, eventually, 2 or 3 weeks later, it sort of resolved itself and whatever. So I'm just wondering, in a situation like that, is there something, you know, anatomically that has happened to cause that disc to be intentioned upon or those root nerves to be irritated? What's the mechanics of that? I'm just curious.
So, avoid having this problem again. Yeah, it's hard because what you're kind of describing is when people refer to throwing their back out, which what we call it a lumbar strain, which can happen really to people of any age and with any type of MRI finding. So some people can have a normal MRI and can experience the exact same thing that you had. The herniated disc, when that's actually causing problems, we think that's more of leg pain or sciatica. So a pain, if the nerve is actually being pinched, it'll send a pain that radiates all the way down your leg, sometimes into your foot. If you step or reach awkwardly or lift awkwardly and have an acute episode of, you know, disabling back pain that lasts for 3 weeks, it's hard to know what the exact pain generator is in that scenario, but that would be termed a lumbar strain. And typically, I just approach that with conservative measures, sometimes a short course of an oral steroid, an anti-inflammatory, and maybe a muscle relaxer for spasm. As far as preventative, just proper lifting technique, staying active, keeping your core strong, it's really hard to prevent it entirely, but I think you can greatly reduce the rate at which it happens if you do stay on top of those things.
Can I ask you a quick question in addition? I take Eliquis, I got AFib, right? So I'm sort of, I'm relegated to either Tylenol and that's it, you know? And as far as anti-inflammatory, so can you take an oral course of like prednisone or something to have the same effect as an epidural, or is it not?
Yeah, I think you can, and oftentimes I will offer that to patients because sometimes it takes some time to get scheduled for the epidural, whereas something called a Medrol pack, which is basically an oral 6-day course of a steroid with a built-in taper, is what I often offer patients.
And okay, great. All right.
It can be quite effective. You're welcome.
Thank you very much for calling. What's better, doctor, heat or cold for pain?
So in general, I use both for patients. For an acute injury, a lot of times cold. Mm-hmm. What I find most of my patients who have arthritic pain, heat tends to work better for them.
What does the cold do as opposed to what does the heat do?
Well, cold is supposed to decrease inflammation and help with an acute injury, whereas heat is supposed to increase blood flow to the area.
800-348-2551. Another Bob. This one's in Valencia. Go ahead, Bob.
Hello, doctor. Name is Bob in Valencia. Back in 1992, I did something stupid. Fell off a tree with a chainsaw. I was up on a ladder. And I crushed L2.
Mm-hmm.
So this was 27 years ago. A wonderful spinal surgeon at Albany Med put me back together with a fusion. probably I've got fused L1 below and two above. Is that, would that be right?
Yeah, that could be right. It depends on the configuration of your fracture exactly, but yeah, usually
yeah.
either
well,
one
crushed,
or two.
I crushed L2.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, there's a fusion back there. And 27 years ago, I have no pain at all. Just wonderful.
That's excellent.
However, two quick questions. One is, here is 27 years beyond that fusion, and I'm experiencing no pain. I'm really in remarkably good condition, reasonable flexibility. What's the life, a life expectancy of a fusion like that, when I could expect some maybe future problems
sure.
might happen?
That's a great question.
Because the screw, apparently the screws have actually broken my x-rays since then. I go back to the doctor every couple of years.
Interesting.
The screws, he claims one of the screws, more of the screws have broken, actually. Question number two, there is some stiffness in that lower back. And I'm an active guy. I work out in the gym, have a trainer. Would you recommend some specific exercises that would help that stiffness feeling, which does affect my balance a little bit sometimes?
So those are great questions. Just to touch on the first one, so about the longevity of a fusion. Once the bone fuses, it's going to forever remain fused. So really there's no longevity there, or the longevity there is permanent, but the thing that can happen is called adjacent segment disease. So what that means is, if you imagine each of the bones in the spine and the discs are supposed to move, well, if you fuse one together, it will increase or put more force at the levels above and below the fusion. So those levels can wear out. The best study we have on that is a study called the Hillebrand study, and it's really from the cervical spine, but we tend to extrapolate that to all areas of the spine. Basically says that a 3% chance per year, or every 10 years, you have a 30% chance that the level above or below your fusion is going to wear out and become symptomatic. So,
yeah, so that's really due to the increased stiffness of the fused area.
Exactly.
You're forcing
now,
stresses, loads above and below.
Whenever a screw is broken, it worries me that an area didn't fuse. Now, there is one possible scenario where the metal fatigued before the fusion had matured, a screw broke, but then the fusion went on to do that, fuse.
Yeah.
But if the fusion happens
before...
Well,
I think I can answer that, because my spinal surgeon, who I see every couple of years, assures me that my fusion worked out just fine. The broken screw happened later.
Yeah. So
I don't know, hard for me to imagine how that actually happens, but it does happen.
Micro motion. It's just like if you were to bend a paperclip back and forth, eventually the metal will fatigue. And even though the screws are stronger, they're susceptible.
Fatigue, it's a fatigue kind of thing.
It is. Yeah. And as far as your stiffness, I mean, you can work on just core strength, hamstring, and quadriceps flexibility. But your fusion is going to be stiff because they took normal segments that moved and linked them together. So... You're never going to get that
muscles. Those muscles are not being worked in the way that they would like to be.
Yeah, but you're always going to stiffen someone's spine if you fuse it. So I think some of that is to be expected from the surgery and the injury that you had.
Okay, so core and
hamstring. Actually, your hamstring and quad flexibility. Yeah, your legs.
Okay.
Can actually
very
help,
good. Thank
help
you very much.
Spine.
Appreciate that.
Thank you very much for
good.
Calling.
Okay. And congratulations. Thank you very much for all the wonderful work that you people do.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you very much. 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. And let's talk now to Sean in New Ashford. Sean, go ahead.
Yes, hi. I suffered an acute hydrated herniated disc about 2 months ago, and had an MRI, and the MRI showed it was in C7. I'm going to a neurosurgeon in a few days, actually, and while I wait for that appointment, I am just thinking about what I might expect to hear from him and what other alternatives I might have to what he might recommend as a surgeon.
And what is your main symptom? Do you have arm pain radiating down your arm?
Yeah. So in the very beginning, it was very acute, and it was a debilitating pain. And I thought I threw my back out in the gym or something or running. And it went on for about 3 weeks. I hoped it would go away. I went to the gym, tried to work it out to no avail. So I finally went to a doctor, got the MRI. So the symptoms are an excruciating pain behind my right scapula and numbness and tingling going down my right arm all the way to my index finger. 2 months later, my index finger is still kind of numb. What's interesting is that after a round of steroids, the excruciating pain has since subsided, and now I'm just kind of generally in a light discomfort, but I still have the numbness and tingling in my right arm.
So in general, conservative treatment or surgery, what I usually tell people is pain is what dissipates quickest. Numbness and tingling takes longer, and weakness is the last thing to improve. Those things have the potential to improve whether you get surgery or not. In general, unless someone has pressure on their spinal cord or something else that would make me want to push for surgery sooner, even in the setting of weakness, a herniated disc, I still tend to offer conservative treatment, physical therapy, course of steroids, maybe even an epidural steroid injection would be the next step. If you've done,
so I'm not really looking forward to surgery in this case.
You're not. You don't have to have it. It's purely elective, I think.
Okay.
And I think that it's all dictated by your symptoms. So my patients tend to fall into two categories. One where we're trying all these things and they're not getting better at all. Those are the people that tend to elect to undergo surgery. There's another group, which you already may be in, where you're getting improvement already. That sounds like that horrible pain. So if they can get rid of that, the rest of that pain in your scapula with it, which is definitely pinched nerve pain. It sounds like it all fits with your herniated disc. If they can do an epidural steroid injection and make that go away completely, then I think that would be, you know, definitely a way to avoid surgery in your case.
And all of that is all of that to get rid of the inflammation and the pain. It doesn't actually fix the herniated disc.
Yeah, but your body can take care of the herniated disc. It's a little different in the cervical spine because it tends to be an associated bone spur, but I would still dictate go off of your symptoms.
So the fact that my pain has been progressively going away, that's not just the result of the steroids working and that's going to be short term and the pain's going to come back?
It may, but it also may continue to go away and go away completely. And then the numbness and tingling could subside.
And what would be your recommendation on in the meantime while I'm waiting for this to get better and it seems to be progressively getting better? Is there any danger in me going back to the gym and going back to running? Am I going to make it any worse?
I think as long as you're careful with the kind of things that you do. I mean, if it was your low back, I would worry about you doing more. It's hard because you don't do a lot with your neck, but you still put some strain on it when you exercise. So I think low impact cardiovascular exercise and some light, you know, weight training would be fine.
Okay, good. All right. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Thank you for calling, Sean. It's 800-348-2551. The neck, the back, and the spine today with Dr. Joseph Popper of Nathan Litauer Hospital, 800-348-2551. Dr. Popper is an orthopedic surgeon, and he's here to take your calls and your questions. 800-348-2551. Lois in Woodstock, go ahead. Hi, Lois.
Yes, hi.
Hi there.
Go right ahead.
Yeah. Okay, I'm having a lumbar laminectomy in 2 weeks. What is the recovery period going to be like? When can I return to normal activities? There'll be no fusion.
It depends on exactly the technique of that the surgeon's using, but in general, for things that don't involve a fusion, I tell most patients 6 weeks to avoid kind of bending, lifting, twisting, and after you get past the 6 weeks, you could really do any activity that you tolerate. That being said, I have plenty of patients that get a minimally invasive, you know, laminectomy surgery that go back to work because they don't have a physical job, you know, after a week. But
you still there?
Yeah.
Okay.
What about physical therapy? Do you get that after such a thing?
So I wouldn't do it initially for that first 6 week period. And then most of my patients I find don't need physical therapy, but it's definitely something that I would offer if they wanted it. But I would probably wait the initial 6 week period.
Why does it take 6 weeks? What kind of things are happening?
I think we just feel most comfortable, depending on the pathology that's going on, but most comfortable with wanting to make sure that everything that was disrupted during the surgery, including, you know, dissection down, spreading of the muscle, removal of some of the ligament, that there's enough healing that's taken place that you're not going to have a recurrence.
Okay, and what about pain? Is there a lot of pain involved?
Generally not with a laminectomy. Even traditional open laminectomies, or more the newer type of a minimally invasive laminectomy, usually not a very painful surgery. In fact, I would say at least half of my patients, although were given pain medicine, come back and say that they didn't report even taking it, maybe took one pain pill afterwards.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you for calling, Lois. It's 800-348-2551. Medical Monday Vox Pop. Back in a moment.
Support comes from the Hyde Collection in Glens Falls, transporting guests to early 20th century Manhattan with the rooftop paintings of John Sloan. Sponsored in part by Warren County, HydeCollection.org. George Propane, Goshen, Massachusetts, family-owned and operated for over 75 years. Serving Western Massachusetts with propane and full-service heating and plumbing, installation, services, and deliveries. GeorgePropane.com. Adirondack Oral Surgery, serving the Capital Region and beyond, accepting most commercial and managed care insurance plans, offering a range of oral and maxillofacial surgery. AdirondackOralSurgery.com. From New York Oncology Hematology, offering second opinions, immunotherapy, and clinical research trials for cancer patients, 35 physicians, 6 locations, NewYorkOncology.com. From the bariatric program at Adirondack Health, Saranac Lake, offering weight loss surgery and lifestyle education, better health, better lives, AdirondackHealth.org. And from Dermatology of the Berkshires, North Adams, proudly offering Cool Sculpting, the latest non-invasive treatment that safely reduces fat cells. For more information, HealthySkinSite.com.
800-348-2551 in Salem. It's Mark. Go ahead, Mark.
Hello, doctor. A year ago this past October 16th, you operated on my L4 disc, and I'm one of those patients that did not have any pain after the operation. I have an L5-S1 that ruptured in 1984, mm-hmm. and that broke off the piece that was causing me horrible pain, and I have had no pain in my legs. But about 6 to 8 months ago, I began to catch my toe on the edge of stairways going up my left leg, on my left leg when I go up the staircase. And then I noticed that my shoe was riding up and down on my heel, mm-hmm. and I've been told that I have what they call foot drop. Which area does that, which disc affects that kind of problem? Is the L4 or the L5-S1?
Yeah, that's a great question, Mark. So it probably may be worthwhile to get a new or an updated MRI if there's a new onset of symptoms. But so typically the toe, the muscle that pulls that up, is called the extensor hallucis longus, typically innervated by the L5 nerve root. Now, the L5, the anatomy is interesting because it can get pinched at the L4-5 level, but it could also get pinched at the L5-S1 level. And really, an MRI is the way to kind of parse that out. So
it's not severe, but the shoe does ride up and down on my heel.
Yeah.
I've had to put a liner in it because my heel's gotten all chafed. Mm-hmm. And I have a little weakness in my left leg. So you think it could be either one then?
It could be, absolutely. So when the nerve, there's two places that it commonly gets pinched at. One is called the lateral recess of the spine, but basically that's where at the L4-5 level, the L5 nerve is susceptible. But then that nerve travels and exits out a foramen, which is a small tunnel on either side when the nerve exits and goes to the leg. And at the L5-S1 level, if that disc is very degenerative and collapsed down, then that L5 nerve could get pinched as it's exiting out that tunnel, which very well could be the case for you.
I think it is then, yeah. It's been since 1984, and they tell me it looks like like an egg that somebody stepped on.
Yeah.
okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Mark. 800-348-2551. In Queensbury, Rick.
Hey, guys.
Hi.
Similar to the caller before, I had a spinal fusion in 1992 due to a football injury, and besides the follow-up visit, I've never been back. I'm 45 years old now. And just wondering a couple things. Once in a while, I get some stiffness between my shoulder blades, and a chiropractor cracks it in, and it's good for a while. The question is a chiropractic visit recommended for that type of surgery? And what type of prevention should I be doing to prevent any further, you know, depletion, or if any?
Yeah, Rick, what level was fused?
I don't know. I believe you know, it was in my neck.
In
so
your neck.
Maybe, yeah.
Okay. So again, we kind of talked about that before, but there is, whenever you fuse someone, you worry about the adjacent level wearing out. No one really knows if that's because we stiffen the segment or because all the levels in the neck and low back are destined to wear out. Some are maybe further along than others. So no one's really proven one way or the other. But we say the rate is about every 10 years, it's a 30% chance that a level adjacent to your fusion, either above or below, can wear out. As far as chiropractic, I have a lot of patients that swear by it. I think in most cases, it probably is safe to do. But again, it's nice, if I have imaging to review, to look at the MRI and make sure there's no significant spinal canal stenosis or narrowing, which are definitely things that I would say I would want to avoid manipulation in those cases. And then as far as activities in general, just trying to stay, you know, active with cardiovascular activity and just stay in good shape is going to be the best thing for your neck and back overall.
Sure. Would you recommend any type of follow-up visit? It's, you know, I have yet to be back since 92.
Yeah, it wouldn't be a bad idea to maybe check an X-ray. Absolutely.
Okay. All right. Thanks, guys.
Thank you very much. Let's talk now to Mary in Woodstock.
Hi. I have pain, loss of balance, and my hips are frozen. I can walk fine with a walker with four wheels, but I cannot get up out of a chair. But what bothers me the most and keeps me from sleeping at night is numbness in both hands and feet. And the injury I had originally was, they said my neck was broken at the fourth, and I had symptoms then with an old-fashioned neck thing to hold up your head. I had symptoms of dizziness and loss of balance, but that got better. I had a aphasia. I couldn't retrieve words.
Okay, Mary, let's
that
let the
better.
Let the doctor chime in. Doctor, what do you think? There's a lot there.
Yeah, there is. Whenever you have numbness and tingling, weakness and loss of balance, the thing I would be concerned about is something called myelopathy, which is the clinical manifestation of cervical stenosis or narrowing around either the cervical or thoracic spine. But if you don't have enough room and actually have pressure on your spinal cord, that can cause weakness, numbness and tingling, clumsiness of the hands, and loss of balance. So ultimately, if you had any of those features and were seen by somebody, they would probably order an MRI if you haven't already had that.
I've had it on the left shoulder.
No, it's like an MRI of your cervical spine or thoracic spine, not of the shoulder.
Oh, okay. But the fact that I cannot sleep, that the cold in my feet and hands, even if it's 90 degrees out, not sleeping.
Is that nerve damage?
The worst.
It's hard to know exactly what that is. But again, the loss of balance is a little bit worrisome, yeah, and I think would warrant a further evaluation.
Paul is in Williamstown. Paul.
Hello, doctor.
Hi there.
Just wanted to ask you, I had a 10 years ago, I had a laminectomy. Another one of those people was super happy with those. Worked out great. I was pain-free afterward. Now I'm 10 years on, and I'm starting to get a little bit more what seems like bone-on-bone feeling. And I'm wondering what's the prognosis going forward. And then the only other question I had was recommendations on core exercises that don't aggravate my low back.
Yeah, so in general, core strengthening exercises, each person's different, and I tell people that ultimately we're not going to know exactly what your activity restrictions are until you try them, because certain patients will be able to do some exercises and not, and others not. In general, core strengthening, sometimes I send patients if they're active, know how to do it on their own, that's one thing, but a lot of my patients may not know what to do, so I'll send them to a physical therapist to set up a home exercise program for them. The other thing, the prognosis long-term for your laminectomy, there are a lot of patients that have degenerative changes in their spine or their discs on imaging such as MRI and don't have daily or even disabling back pain. So I think that, you know, if you can do some activities, try to work on some core strengthening, maybe take an occasional anti-inflammatory just because the disc is starting to wear out. At some point, sometimes advanced imaging may be helpful to get an updated MRI and kind of see what's going on.
Got it. Yeah, I haven't had any reason to do that, but yeah, they took a lot of material out of the disc, so my feeling is that there can't be a lot left. It's a flat bag in there. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, in general, you know, people can have discogenic pain or pain from the disc degeneration itself. I think, you know, for me, it really has to, surgery in that case has to be an absolute last resort, because I think that the best indications for surgery are things like probably what you had surgery for, which is leg pain or sciatic pain. Surgery for back pain itself or for the disc wearing out is really not a great treatment option. So I really try to avoid that.
This was a big old rupture. So, all righty. Well, that's encouraging. So we're on our own for core strength exercises. Just figure out what works.
Yeah, I think doing, you know, crunches and some light back extensions, things like that. You could also, if the range of motion hurts too much, there are exercises more called isometric, which just involves flexing the muscle without actually, you know, curling up.
Contracting.
Exactly. Yeah. And you can still exercise the muscle in that way and not be ranging the disc or aggravating the disc or any joint for that matter.
Cool. Well, I'll take all that in. Thanks for the help, and thanks for the radio show.
Thank you very much for calling. 800-348-2551. We've got about 8 minutes or so left to take more calls, and we go to Debbie in Woodstock. Debbie.
Hi. I have a sort of moderate or minor scoliosis in my back since childhood. I've been diagnosed with some spinal stenosis. And I have osteoporosis in my spine and osteopenia in my hip. So my question is, one, does the osteoporosis in my spine impact or worsen spinal stenosis? And second question is, what exercises should I do and should I not do because of these conditions?
So those are great questions, Debbie. Osteoporosis is basically loss of bone mineral density. So we define that by a DEXA scan, which is a bone mineral density. It's basically an X-ray of the hips and an X-ray of the lumbar spine, and it spits out a number. And when it's less than negative 2.5, we call it osteoporosis. So the reason we care about osteoporosis is that increases your chance, your fracture risk, basically. And the great score we have now is called the FRAC score, but that gives you a 10-year risk of any type of fracture and a major osteoporotic fracture, which would be a spine fracture or a hip fracture. In general, for osteoporosis, you should talk with your primary care doctor about it, but if it's osteopenia, we tend not to treat. But for osteoporosis, a lot of recommendations would favor treatment of that, and the goal of that would be to decrease your risk of fracture. And the way we treat it now, there's a whole host of medications, but there's bisphosphonates, there's more long-acting injectables, and some newer medications that actually build the bone up rather than just prevent the loss of bone mineral density. And as far as spinal stenosis and how that relates, so spinal stenosis, again, is just narrowing of the spinal canal. There's not enough room for the nerves. And the reason it happens is typically from a couple structures, but it's from the disc as it degenerates, bulges backwards. There's a ligament called the ligamentum flavum that gets thickened and hypertrophied, and then you get arthritis in the little joints called the facet joints, and the combination of those things impinge on the nerves and take up space for them. So really the osteoporosis isn't going to affect your spinal stenosis, and I think in general for osteoporosis, resistance exercises are going to be the best things, and possibly even considering a treatment to build up your bone density.
By resistance, you mean weight training?
Weight training, exactly.
I just read an article the other day, and the reason I was asking you is they were saying with osteoporosis, you shouldn't bend down in exercising. And a lot of what I do in classes involve bending down with weights and then lifting them up over my head and down and up. And I was concerned that I shouldn't do that. I'd like to keep doing it.
I think if you can do it and you build up to it and you do it safely and have good technique, then it's safe to do. People's bone has to get very weak for it to just spontaneously fracture.
Okay, great. Thank you.
And you don't have to be the Russian gold medalist in weightlifting. You can do the light stuff, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, the 10 5-pounders. Right. 800-348-2551. Let's talk to Paul in Albany.
Hi. Quick question, maybe quick. I've been wondering why people don't talk about prolotherapy. Somebody recommended it to me, and everybody I know, including myself, has had major pain relief and no damage the way that cortisone can damage the tissues and a longer-lasting result.
I'm not familiar with this therapy. What's
the name again?
Prolotherapy. It's a physiatrist has been doing it. She's retiring now, but I also know another spinal doctor who started using it recently. I guess it's been done for many decades, so that's something.
And what is it? What does it involve?
Oh, it's an injection of sucrose or saline that kind of loosens up. It goes, you know, in between the I never know the right words. Between, like, I know for me, I have problems with my facets.
Okay.
I have spinal stenosis L4.
Yeah.
But it's also helped me with my knee and my shoulder. It's kind of like this miracle thing. It's like acupuncture that goes into you, though.
Yeah.
it's several injections.
Well, that's great. Yeah, I think that there are different types of injections other than steroids. There's another one that we often use called viscosupplementation, which is approved for knees and hips. It's not always covered by insurance nowadays. About half of them pay for it, but it's basically the building blocks of cartilage that they found helpful for injections. So there are definitely other injections that people find beneficial and there's good evidence for, aside from cortisone injections. I agree with you.
Jennifer and Latham. Jennifer, go ahead.
Hi, doctor, and hello, guys. I love your show. I have a question about my husband. About 11 years ago, he hurt his back pulling a lawn tractor out of some mud, and he herniated his disc. It kind of ruptured. And the problem with him is that he is a martial arts instructor, so he opted not to have the surgery. He had an MRI, and it showed that it was herniated and kind of the fluid had come out. But he could not afford to take the 6 weeks off for surgery.
Mm-hmm.
So he did it the hard way and kind of did tons of physical therapy. He's a very active person, does a lot of yoga, does a lot of things. However, he has recovered and he's relatively okay, except that his balance isn't as good as it used to be. And it used to be great. Obviously he has done this since he was a child, martial mm-hmm. arts. So, you know, he was in a good position when it happened, but condition anyway. But I've noticed that his one foot on one leg, it almost seems like atrophied a little bit. Mm-hmm. It looks like it's lost weight
mm-hmm.
and it's very sensitive to touch. And he has recently in the last like 2.5 years developed like a fluid inside of his big toe, which he has had drained by a podiatrist.
See,
he's gone to two different podiatrists.
We've got about a minute left, so let's let the doctor jump in here.
Yeah.
Okay.
At some point,
I'm worried about the progression of this.
Yeah. So re-imaging may be important thing for him to get a new. If he, it doesn't sound like he has symptoms of pinched nerve, though. He doesn't have any sciatica or anything going down his leg.
No, not really. So, in the beginning, yes. But
in the beginning,
anymore.
But yeah, but not since 12 years. So he could be seen and be evaluated. What you look at, the studies that look at people that get surgery or not for a herniated disc, 2 years out, everybody is doing better. So eventually you can get better without surgery. If it's been that long, then he might have some permanent nerve damage from the initial injury.
We are just about out of time. My apologies to those we left on the line, and I'd like to thank Dr. Joseph Popper of Nathan LaTower Hospital for being with us today. Support for Medical Monday comes from TriCor Anesthesia Group, accepting applications for CRNAs to provide anesthesia services for the Capital Region. 518-598-2042 for details. Our engineer today, Zach Malloy. Our screener who took your calls, Joe Makowitz, answered the phones. Our producer, Jim Lavoulis. I'm Brian Shields. Thanks again for joining us today on Vox Pop. Tomorrow, Ray's back, and it's all about birds. Stay tuned now for the Media Project.